Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's so nice to be with you today to fellowship together and to just share our story. You know, I just want to begin by saying I have appreciated each one of you so much, your love and support over the years, your patience with me. And I know that many of you have been praying for this day for a long time, for my life. And you've each imparted something wonderful to me through the way of encouragement or prayer, just your friendship, your love, your fellowship. And I appreciate each one of you so much. And it's just, I'm amazed, actually, that I'm sitting here this afternoon to be able to share with you what God has done in our lives, my life, Ted's life, and how he's brought us together in such a wonderful way and really just in his perfect plan and at his perfect time. And that's what has amazed Ted and I so much as we share together, as we're getting to know one another. It's just the perfect plan and the perfect time, you know, for each one of us to be together. And I thought I would begin by laying a foundation of just sharing the story of how Ted and I met and the engagement, the proposal. Ladies love all those details, and I want to tell you every detail. And, you know, Ted shared a little bit in his message on Tuesday morning, but, you know, it's just not enough. I understand. Several people actually came up to me after Ted's message and said, "What about your side of the story?" I'm like, "Okay, yeah, that's good. I can tell my side of the story." But really, it began back in 1993, the very first weekend that I came to Zion. I didn't realize at that time that I was going to be a student at ZMI. I thought I was coming here to work at the Robert Packer Hospital because I was a nurse by profession, and I wanted to live in this area because my sister was here. Of course, that all changed, and I became a student at ZMI. But the very first weekend that I was here, I met Ted and Diane, who were also students in Zion Ministerial Institute at that time. And we shared a dinner together in the dining room, as was the custom. I mean, we have fellowship meals all the time here. We have meals as one big happy family. And I ended up sitting with Ted and Diane during that dinner. And in the course of that dinner, they were sharing with me their how they met and also their ministry in West Africa, their vision for Africa, the experiences that they had already had there. And I could have listened to them for hours. We sat there, I don't know how long, and just talked. And they shared with me, and I shared with them. And I was struck by two things. I admired that they worked together such as a team in the ministry that God had given them. And as they were sharing with me, that was very evident just from their conversation. And that really touched something in me. And I thought, wow, that is really something that I would love someday, you know, is to be work together, you know, with my husband in what God has called us to do. And I admired that very much in Ted and Diane. And also, of course, their call to Africa. I was very interested in Africa at that time, and I'll get into that a little bit more later. But their heart for Africa, their ministry in Africa, I was very interested. Then in 1996, I had the opportunity to travel to Togo, and that was kind of a scouting trip because I had a heart for Africa and thought that I might like to minister there one day somewhere in Africa. And so it was arranged through Zion Fellowship that I would go to Togo and live with Ted and Diane. They were in Lomé, Togo at that time, and I lived with them for 3.5 months. So that was a very good amount of time to forget what it's like to be a tourist and realize this is going to be real life. You know, if you live and minister in this country, this is what you're going to face on a daily basis. This is what the weather's like. This is what the food's like. These are the challenges in the ministry and all that. All that my eyes were open to. You know, after a couple of weeks, I was like, okay, I don't feel like a tourist anymore. You know, it was all glamorous at the beginning and new and adventurous, but then real life sets in. So I lived with them for 3.5 months in 1996. And again, the same two things struck me. Their close relationship in the ministry, how they worked together as a team. I very much admired their marriage. and, you know, their relationship together, and also their heart for Africa, you know, their heart for the people, how they just invested and poured out day after day, day after day. I made several more trips to West Africa, and it was always with Ted and Diane. I would stay with them, and we would do seminars together. Diane and I did several ladies' seminars, women's meetings, one-on-one. We would, you know, visit and just visit churches and things. And all those things were just cementing our friendship, really. And before Ted and Diane had actually gone back to Africa full-time, Diane was the one who trained me. In the office in Zion Fellowship, she trained me for all the housekeeping. She trained me in many areas of my work here in Zion Fellowship. So she was really like a mentor to me, someone that I looked up to, someone that I really admired and received so much in the way of instruction and correction and just friendship and a godly example of a woman in ministry. And then in 1999, Ted and Diane made their initial visit to Burkina Faso, which is the country that Ted is based in now. And I was there for that initial visit into Burkina Faso when they were scouting things out, when they were making their first contacts, when they were learning how to drive around the city and all those things. And then the following year in 2000, I went with Pastor Bailey to Burkina Faso and we held a seminar there and the four of us were together. And the last time that I visited there was in 2004 and I was with Ted and Diane there and Diane and I did a large ladies seminar in Burkina Faso. And I'm saying all this to just show you that Ted and I go back a long time, more than 20 years. We've been friends. And so everything that's developed has just been very comfortable and nice and not awkward at all because we've already have a solid friendship and have known each other, you know, quite well as friends throughout the years. Well, then, of course, in August of 2013, Diane passed away from cancer. And I vividly remember that day because I had been teaching in Miami, and there's some people from Miami here at the convention. I was teaching in Miami that week, and I had taught on Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. And I was sitting in the airport on Saturday morning waiting for my flight to come back to Waverly. And Angeline called me on the phone as I was waiting for my plane, and she told me that Diane had passed away that morning. And so as I was sitting there and as I was on my way back, I had two flights that I had to take to get back to Waverly. And on those flights, I was just meditating. I was reflecting on the friendship that I had had with Diane and how much she had meant to me and all that she had invested and imparted to me and just what an example she was. And so after I came back to Zion Chapel, I was scheduled to speak at the service on that Sunday night. And I spoke a message on friendship. And of course, a lot of it was just from the personal friendship that I had with Diane. Well, then there was a memorial service here at Zion Chapel on August 22nd. And Diane's body was brought here and we had a memorial service. Pastor Tucker asked me to do a eulogy as part of that service. So I was preparing that eulogy, and the morning of the memorial service, I was in my apartment just praying and asking the Lord to, you know, help me and give me grace to speak the eulogy that I had prepared for Diane's in memory of her life and her ministry. And I really felt quickened by the Holy Spirit to prepare something in French. And I have a foundation in the French language. I studied French in high school. I studied French when I was 3.5 months in Togo with Ted and Diane. That was one of the reasons why I went there, was to develop the French language. But I hadn't spoken French in a long time. But I really felt quickened to prepare something in French. And I felt that I was to speak that directly to Ted. Because, of course, nobody else in the congregation was going to understand French, or very little. So As I was, the Lord gave me the scripture to use. It was in Proverbs. It was about how the wife is the crown of her husband. And so I was rehearsing this in my apartment. And if you had walked by my apartment that morning, you probably would have thought, what is she doing in there? Because I just said it over and over and over so that it would roll off my tongue and sound natural and not choppy, you know, like I was in kindergarten or something. So anyway, when I finished the eulogy, and many of you were probably here and heard that, but when I looked at Pastor Ted and just said, Pasteur Ted, and I started in French, it wasn't love or anything like that, but definitely for me, something happened in that moment. Like, we made eye contact, and I'm speaking to him personally in French, and I didn't know what was going on, but I knew something was going on. And he also shared with me later, after I told him that, that really ministered to him as well. He said, when you started speaking in French, he said, that ministered such a depth of comfort to my heart. He said, I missed the French language because Ted and Diane had been home from Africa for almost 2 years. And, you know, Diane was very ill during those months. And so they couldn't speak French together. And Ted said, I missed the French. And I really felt that the Holy Spirit quickened me in that way just to begin the work that he was, you know, going to bring to pass in each one of our lives. And I thought, what a small thing, you know, that I just share 2 or 3 sentences in French. And yet it was such a pivotal moment, you know, in God's plan and purpose. And so I'm very glad I was obedient to prepare those few sentences in French, because that was really watershed moment, you know, for me personally. I knew there was a connection that happened there, but I didn't know quite what it was. And really, it was the same for Ted. So that eulogy was really very meaningful, very, very meaningful, not only in celebrating Ted's life, but also in what was going to be coming, what was going to be coming in the future. And then in October of 2013, which is almost exactly a year ago, October of 2013, I love the fall. I love the season of autumn. It's just one of my favorite seasons. Orange is my favorite color. You know, I was just born for autumn. And I've always loved it on the hill. You know, especially in the northeast of the United States, autumn is just beautiful. And I've always loved walking the hill. Well, this particular day, I decided to take a walk on the hill. It was a gorgeous day, and the leaves were already turning and everything. And I was coming down the hill by the cemetery, and Ted was visiting Waverly at that time. And so I'm coming down the hill and approaching the cemetery, and I saw that Ted was sitting in the cemetery on one of the benches there. And so I'm starting to have a debate with myself. I'm saying, okay, should I go over and talk to him, or should I just walk by because he's probably having a private moment, you know? And so I'm going back and forth. What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? And I don't even know if I really consciously made the effort, but all of a sudden I was just over there by Ted and asking him how he was doing. And I said, you know, Ted, how are you doing? How are things going? And about an hour and 15 minutes later, we left the cemetery. He went one way and I went another way. But in that conversation, it was very comfortable. I mean, our conversation, we talked about memories, you know, of Diane. We were talking about Diane. We were talking about memories of when we had been in Africa together. He was sharing with me different things about the ministry now, at the present time. And it was just a very comfortable conversation. There was no awkwardness. You know, it was just like two good friends having a conversation over a cup of coffee. That's exactly what it was like. And I was actually just a little bit like uncomfortable because cars kept going by. You know, the hill is well traveled, and there would be this car that would go down, and then another car would come up, and I'm like, oh, what are these people thinking? You know, but just Ted and I here in the cemetery, you know, talking, and I'm like, oh, they're, you know, tongues are gonna start wagging. And but I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna put that out of my mind and everything like that. So, but that was sort of the second event for me that really sort of just caused my heart to flutter, I guess you'd say. You know, I just felt so comfortable with Ted. Of course, no idea at that point of where it was going. And there was nothing romantic about it. There was nothing sort of, you know, I didn't feel like I was in love with him, or I wasn't thinking of him as a potential husband at all. Not at all. It was just two good friends. You know, but looking back on it now, that conversation was just really nice, you know, and we talked very easily together, and I remembered that later. So that would have been 1 year ago. And then in January, and I don't think this was planned, but Ted and I were scheduled to teach in Zion Ministerial Institute the same week. And Ted was taking the first half of the week, and he was teaching cross-cultural missions in Zion Ministerial Institute here in Waverly. And I was scheduled to teach the Song of Solomon the second half of the week. So we were both teaching that week. And Ted finished his class halfway through Wednesday morning, and I came in after the long break on Wednesday, and I started teaching the Song of Solomon. So I was all prepared, and I walked into the classroom, and sitting there in the back of the classroom was Ted Topper with his computer. He was in his suit and tie, and he looked just like a ZMI student. And I saw him there, and my first reaction was, what is he doing here? He has no idea, you know, what I'm going to be teaching. And, of course, he did have an idea what I was going to be teaching. And I was very concerned, actually, how the class would affect him, just having recently lost his wife. Because the Song of Solomon is the foundation of the book, is all the love relationship between a bridegroom and a bride. So I was very concerned that it would really affect him, not in a negative way, but that it would just, you know, the grief, the loss, and that he would really feel it. And so I was very concerned about that. And I was concerned for myself, knowing that he was in the class. I'm like, oh, how am I going to teach this? You know, these are the things that were in about 10 seconds, you know, just really stirring in my spirit and in my mind. And the Lord just spoke to me, and he said, you teach and don't worry about anything else. You teach what you're supposed to teach, and just don't worry about anything else. So I made my way to the front of the class, and I started teaching the Song of Songs. And chapter 1 and verse 2 is, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for his love is sweeter, better than wine. And, you know, the Song of Solomon is a very graphic book of, there's a lot of imagery. There's, you know, just about the love relationship. You know, and of course, I teach it from the point of view of the bridegroom is the Lord Jesus Christ, and the bride is us, our individual relationship with our bridegroom, our preparation to be his bride. And that's how I teach the class. So I began to teach the class, and I felt very comfortable actually teaching. The Lord was very gracious and just anointed me, I would say, particularly for that class with Ted, you know, sitting in the back of the class, and myself knowing the situation so well. On the second day of class, I got to chapter one, towards the end of chapter one, where the bridegroom is describing the beauty of the bride. And one of those descriptions is, you have dove's eyes. You know, your eyes are like dove's eyes. And I was starting to explain the significance of dove's eyes, and that the dove is faithful to one mate for life. And when that mate is gone and no longer there, that the remaining, the one who remains mourns for the rest of, you know, mourns for the rest of the time. And it was at that point when I was sharing these things that I saw Ted in the back of the classroom, and his, you know, just his head went down, and I could see him reach for his pocket, and he brought up his handkerchief, and he's dabbing his eyes, and I'm like, oh no, this is it, you know. And I was quite affected by that, actually, because, of course, I could see from the front of the class how it was affecting Ted. But I had one idea of how it was affecting Ted, and found out that it was something totally different a little bit later. You know, but at one point, Ted had to actually get up and leave. And I thought, oh, this is it. He's overcome with grief, and, you know, he's just overwhelmed. And I felt kind of, you know, upset about that, that it had been in my class that, you know, all that was stirred up again and that he had to leave. Well, I found out later that it was a little different than I thought. And Ted had talked to Pastor Tucker. Well, he had been talking to Pastor Tucker, and Pastor Tucker was encouraging him, not towards me specifically, but just, you know, have you thought about marrying? And, you know, just things like that. And anyway, so Ted went to Pastor Tucker that evening and shared with Pastor Tucker what had happened to him in the class, what the Lord had done in his life. And you heard him share on Tuesday morning that at the moment when I was teaching about dove's eyes, that, you know, that spirit of mourning, if you will, was just fell away, and that it was totally gone, and that there was such a joy that was left in its place, that the Lord just planted that joy in his heart, and that when he looked up and saw me, he was just overcome, and that the Lord had just put such love in his heart towards me. And so he's sharing these things with Pastor Tucker. And as I understood it, you know, Ted said to Pastor Tucker, but that's Pastor Bailey's daughter. You know, I don't think she's going to go for it. I don't think she's going to go for it. And Pastor Tucker looked at Ted and said, oh, I think she'll go for it. I think she'll go for it. And that was enough encouragement, you know, for Ted to then contact me on Skype the next day, asking if he could meet with me privately on Saturday. And so I received this Skype message as I'm sitting in my office. And here's Ted Topper Skyping me, asking if he can meet with me privately on, you know, sometime on Saturday, and what was a good time. And I thought, there's only one reason why he would want to meet with me privately. You know, why he would have to ask to meet with me privately. Because there were often times when the missionaries are home on furlough that they come into my office, because I take care of all the business affairs for the missionaries. I handle their support and their contributions. I handle their deposits, their wire transfers, many of their financial transactions. And so it's not uncommon at all for missionaries to come into my office and talk business. You know, so I was like, well, if he's asking to talk to me privately in my office, there must be another reason. It's not business. And I was really feeling quite excited, actually, hoping against hope, you know, that perhaps he was interested, because at this point, of course, I was very, my heart was very towards Ted, and I had been praying for him specifically that the Lord would take that spirit of mourning from him, and that he would be able to walk. You know, grief is a process, we all know that, but that he would be able to, by God's grace, walk through, you know, the period of grieving and come out of it rejoicing in what God had for him to do without Diane, if you will. And so I had been praying for him over the months that since Diane had passed away. And so anyway, he wanted to meet in the Blue Common Room, and I said, oh, no, no, no. I said, I live here. We're not meeting in the Blue Common Room because there's too many people, and if just Ted and I were in the Blue Common Room talking, that, again, would get people going. And so I said, no, why don't you just come to my office, and we'll just leave the door open, and, you know, we'll meet after brunch. So Ted and I made our way to my office on Saturday, January 25th, and he sat down in one office chair, and I sat down in another office chair, and I did actually come out from behind my desk, because I thought, I don't want this to seem like a business meeting. I don't think he's here for business. So we just were sitting across from each other in office chairs in my office. And he started to share with me what had happened to him in the Song of Solomon class, at the eulogy, at the cemetery, these different things that I've shared. He just started to share with me, you know, what the Lord had done in his life. And then he ended it by saying, you know, that the Lord had given him such an affection for me, and that he felt love for me. And then he looked at me and he said, well, how do you feel about everything I just said? And, you know, my heart was just overwhelmed with what he had just shared with me. It was just so meaningful to me, everything that he had shared. It was so meaningful to me because of our shared history, and just, you know, how the eulogy had affected me and how the visit at the cemetery had affected me and these things. And so I just said, well, I feel the same way. And then he just, his office chair is on wheels. So it got a little bit closer and he leaned forward and he said, well, Suzette, will you marry me? And I was just immediately, I just said, yes, of course, I'll marry you, Ted. Yes, let's go. Yeah. It was just immediate. I didn't even have to think about it. I didn't have to say, oh, you better give me a little bit of time. I better talk to my dad. It was none of that. It was just instant. It just flowed right out. It's almost like those moments where you feel like your mouth is speaking and you didn't even have time to, like, think about what you were going to say. It just flowed right out like a river. And then we just kind of looked at each other and we're like, well, what do we do now, you know? because I found out later, he totally did not come into my office planning to propose. Like he said, he had no ring, no flowers, no chocolate. He didn't get down on one knee, you know, and so he was not planning on proposing. And so, you know, we just talked for a little bit longer and he said, well, I guess I better call your dad and ask his permission for your hand in marriage. And I said, yeah, that'll be fine if you call him. Don't worry, you know, don't worry. So we called my parents, and actually it was my mom who answered the phone, and I just said, Mom, you know, are you sitting down? And she's like, should I be sitting down? And I said, yeah, I think you're going to want to sit down. I have something to tell you. And I just didn't beat around the bush at all, because her and I, you know, we just get right to the point. And I said, well, Ted Topper is in my office, and I said, we just had a nice conversation, and at the end of the conversation, he asked me to marry him. And I said yes. And she was very excited, you know, immediately. She was just very effusive and very excited. And then she said, I knew. And I said, Mom, you couldn't have known. Nobody knows. I just found out myself. And she said, no, Suzette. She said, I knew. She said, the day you called me and told me that Sister Diane had passed away, she said, the Lord spoke to my heart that Ted was going to be your husband. And I was just amazed that the Lord would do that. Mom's been praying for my husband from, you know, day one. But, you know, the thing about my mom, and I do want to share this with those of you who are mothers, my mom never put pressure on me to be married. Her primary thing was always that I would fulfill the will of God for my life. And Mom knew that I had leadership qualities. She knew that I had a call to the ministry. And there were many years that I was fighting against that call, especially a 10-year period of time in my life where I was really fighting against that call. And Mom always encouraged me during that time. And it wasn't ever really about, in one sense, preparing me for marriage. It was that I would know the call of God for my life and that I would walk in that call and prepare myself to fulfill that call. And a lot of that is because of, you know, my mom's experiences, that she instilled that so strongly in me. And so I did admire that about my mom, you know, throughout my life. And so when, you know, for the Lord to speak like that to my mom about who my husband was going to be before the fact, I was just really blessed by that. So that's basically the story of the proposal and how Ted and I got together. But for the second half of the meeting, I just felt to share on my wait for a husband. And that's what I guess I want to entitle this part of our fellowship together, you know, in this wonderful love story. We all love a good love story. And each one of you have a wonderful love story. And I know some of your love stories, but not all. But they are wonderful to share together and to talk about. But my wait for a husband, of course, was a very long one. And as I've meditated and reflected back on the years of waiting for this moment in my life, the Lord has brought to my remembrance through memories various houses that I've lived in throughout my life. And I shared some of this in my engagement testimony in Zion Chapel. And I just want to share that this morning too. And what I'm going to share is just to mothers who have daughters who are not yet married. It's to daughters who, it's to single women who are not yet married and still in their wait for a husband. It's to those who counsel single women and young women. And the Lord was really quickening me, even in the life of Esther, about the different houses that Esther was in. And you know, Pastor Bailey has that book, The Three Houses of Esther. So I'll just call this The Houses of Suzette. And I'm not comparing myself to Esther, but as I've reflected back on the years of waiting and how God has prepared me for this moment in my life, that's where he took me back to, was the different houses that I've lived in over the years. And the first house was the house of my father. And that house was a temporary house. You know, when we are being brought up by our moms and dads, that's relatively a short period of time in our lives, you know, where we're actually in our mom and dad's house. My testimony in the house of my father was that I had a very godly heritage. Even going back generations, there are many ministers in my family. And my foundation from my mom and dad is a very godly one. It's a very strong one. I had a very happy and secure childhood. I have wonderful memories of growing up. And like I said, my mom's goal and constant prayer was that, first of all, that, you know, I would fulfill the will of God for my life. And that was how she led me and directed me. But in my father's house, when I was 11 years old, I had a dream. And I vividly remember this dream. And in the dream, I knew I was in Africa. Don't ask me how, but I just knew that I was in Africa. I had a white uniform on, and I was sitting on a stool. And stretched out in front of me was a line of African children. And so I knew that I was a nurse, because it was a nurse's uniform. And basically what I was doing was giving immunizations. I was just inoculating the children, you know, that were in my dream. So I knew from that point on that I wanted to be a nurse, and there was never any question in my mind about, you know, that. And I knew one day that I would go to Africa. And that was really when Africa became real. And I had an attraction to Africa, and I wanted to know about Africa. And it was kind of the beginning of the call, you would say, towards Africa. So that was when I was 11 years old. And then when I was 26 and still under my father, you know, and mother, not living with them, but in their house, so to speak. At age 26, a prophet visited the church of my mom and dad. And he had a recognized prophetic ministry. And he asked my mom and dad for the names of their children and the ages of their children. So my mom and dad took a piece of paper for me, a piece of paper for my brother, and a piece of paper for my sister. And they wrote my name, you know, our names on the top of each one and our age. And at that time I was 26 years old and I was living in Colorado. And he wrote basically three things on my piece of paper. One of them was Jeremiah 29:11, which is, "For I know the plans I have for you." And we all are very familiar with that verse about an expected end, an expected end. "I will give you a hope and a future and an expected end." And he wrote that I was a late bloomer. And the third thing that he wrote is that I would be married someday. So those three things were on my piece of paper. And my mom actually called me on the phone that night and told me those things. And I wrote them down on a piece of paper, and I actually still have that piece of paper tucked in an old Bible that I used to have. And that's how I know how old I am, because I wrote the year, it was 1991, that I got that phone call. It was in April of 1991 that I got that phone call. And, you know, so those three things have actually held me. They've helped me to stay steady. That, because being a late bloomer, of course, you realize you're going to be much later doing things than the average person your age, you know, being a late bloomer. So that was okay with me. I had no problem with that. And it really helped me to remain steady. Well, sometimes. I would have to hold on to that when I was unsteady. Let me put it that way. And then, of course, that I would be married someday. And Jeremiah 29:11 has always been a very significant verse in my life, and it's been spoken over me on numerous occasions. Then, about 10 years later, the second house that I came to was the House of Zion. And I call it the House of Zion because that's really where, when I came to Zion Ministerial Institute, that's really where I was established in the ways of God. That's really where I was settled into understanding that God had a purpose for my life. Even though my mom had been instilling this in me, I was still, you know, independent, thought I knew what I wanted for my life and was basically taking my own way. But it was when I came to the House of Zion that all that changed. And I really began to apprehend. My heart began to be apprehended, you know, with God's purpose for my life. And of course, that's where I met the Toppers. And the House of Zion is a permanent house. It's a permanent house. That's where the vision of Zion was birthed in my heart. That's where I really started to mature spiritually. And just such an investment from each one of the teachers who were here instructing and teaching and correcting. You know, so many wonderful things took place in my life. That's where Diane trained me, you know, for many aspects of life in the ministry, and where I started to travel. And I felt like in the House of Zion, I went from a little child to a young woman, you know, where I was learning to overcome and I was learning to walk in the ways of God. And there was, I can never thank the Lord enough for his pathway for me coming through the House of Zion here, living here, you know, in this place, going to school here and working here. There's been such a tremendous investment in my life, and I want to spend the rest of my life giving Zion a return on their investment in me, because it's just been life-transforming for me. It's just changed everything. And then the third house was the house of my beloved Papa, as I called him, who was Pastor Bailey. And of course, his house was kind of within the House of Zion, but it was a very different house. It was a very different house. And he liked to call, well, let me call the House of Papa a house of training, a house of training. And he liked to call his training of me WIT, which meant wife in training, wife in training. And he took it very seriously every single day. And it was in the House of Papa, and this is just one aspect of our relationship, as you well know, but it was in the House of Papa that I really learned to die to myself, that I learned to serve and not be served, that I learned to submit, that I learned to yield my will to God's will. You know, all these things were being worked in my life and in my heart in the House of Pastor Bailey. And I know that I was a tremendous blessing to Pastor Bailey and met a need, but I cannot express to you how important it was for me to have Pastor Bailey in my life. I mean, it was just beyond valuable. It's just inexpressible what his influence has been in my life. And it was to prepare me to be a wife, because I didn't realize how independent I was and how self-willed I was. And Pastor Bailey had some very rough times, and so did I, to be quite honest. There were many difficult things, you know, that happened in the House of Pastor Bailey for me, and I did not make it easy for Pastor Bailey many, many times. We had many disagreements. I was very, you know, I had my way of thinking, you know, and things, and there was a lot of chiseling. There was a lot of rough edges being polished and sanded. And I've told Ted he owes a lot to Pastor Bailey, because Pastor Bailey paid quite a price for me to be where I am today. And he was very instrumental in the development as a young woman in God. It was there that I was chastened, that I received correction many, many times. I developed discipline. But it was also in the house of Pastor Bailey where I was given many opportunities to teach. He gave me my first opportunity to teach in Zion Chapel. I started in adult Sunday school, and other opportunities opened from there. And, you know, for the first opportunities that Pastor Bailey gave me to do these things, I was always resisting. I was like, you know, and this was just me at that time. You know, I was resisting what God wanted to develop in me. You know, and Pastor Bailey had to persevere, and he just had to ignore my tears and my protests and all my arguments and you know, my logic and everything. And but my heart was being softened. I was learning meekness. I was, you know, I was being instructed and trained and developed. And, you know, the opportunity for travel, you know, I began to travel with Pastor Bailey, and we went all over the world. And, you know, all of that, the house of my father, the house of Zion, the house of Pastor Bailey, my papa, they all laid a foundation in my life for the fourth house, which is the house of my husband, which Ted and I joke now about it, and he says, "You're on the front porch and the door is open," you know, but I'm not quite in, you know, I'm not quite in yet. But in less than a month, you know, I'll be in the front door of the house of my husband. And that's also a permanent house until death do us part. A permanent house, and I'm looking forward to living there and to walking alongside Ted, taking a position that I'm so honored to take with Ted, to carry on what he and Diane have already built and established on a solid foundation. And, you know, Ted and I will just continue to fulfill the plans and the purposes that God has for Zion in West Africa, in Burkina Faso, and wherever the Lord would lead us. And as I continue to learn to yield and submit, as I continue to learn what it is to be a godly wife and a godly helpmate, it will lead to our eternal home. And hopefully that eternal home will be on the summit of spiritual Mount Zion. You know, that's our goal. You know, before I sit down, you know, after sharing these things with you, I just can't thank each one of you enough for your love and support, for your encouragement, for your prayers, and, you know, all the way that you've walked with me, you know, to this point. You've all invested in me. You've all shared your lives with me, and I'm so grateful for each one of you and your friendship. And I don't know where I'd be today without, you know, my time in each one of these houses, the friendships that have been formed during these years of waiting. And, you know, I'll look forward to all of that continuing on a scale that's a little bit different now. I'll be 5,000 miles away in one sense, but the journey continues, and God will continue his work in my life, in our marriage, in our ministry, and also in each one of your lives. And we will look forward to that eternal home together, where we will fellowship and just rejoice in all the marvelous things that God has done. And the verse that Ted and I have chosen to kind of be the theme at this point in our lives is Psalm 118 and verse 23. This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. And, you know, the Lord is working in very miraculous ways and supernatural ways in each one of our lives to bring us into his purposes. And it's stories, each one of us is a story. You know, we could have never sat down and wrote out or planned out, not at all. You know, they're so unique, so wonderful. So God bless each one of you. I love you very much. And it's just been really nice to share the details, and also hopefully to encourage you who are married, you who have daughters who are yet to be married, and you who are single and waiting. You know, God is good, and he will fulfill his plan and purpose if you trust in him. Amen.